Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, a beautiful Wednesday, the 13th of June. Immigration reform is what we talk about the first hour of the program today in a posting that he did on Congressional Quarterly's website yesterday. Our first guest, Michael Sandler, says this: President Bush arrived on Capitol Hill yesterday hoping to revive a sweeping immigration overhaul in the Senate that his administration helped draft. It was a rare visit to the GOP policy lunch, his first in 5 years, and was intended to convince a few fence-sitting Republicans of the importance of backing what could be the most significant domestic achievement of his tenure. Majority Leader Harry Reid pulled the bill from the Senate floor on June 7 after a stalemate with Republicans who wanted more time to debate amendments, led to a third failed effort to end debate on the measure. The third vote failed 45-50, with 7 Republicans supporting the motion, far short of the 20 GOP votes Reid has indicated the president must deliver. Going to be talking about whether or not the president has the political power that he needs to persuade people to vote on this, the importance of the issue, and why this is such a contentious issue, particularly among Republicans and conservative Republicans, who, from what I have read, are very concerned about the amnesty portion of this bill. We'll have two guests with us. Michael Sandler is immigration reporter for Congressional Quarterly, and later we'll be speaking with Marcelo Suarez Orozco, who is Courtney Sale Ross University Professor of Globalization and Education and co-director of Immigration Studies at New York University. Here's the phone number if you'd like to join us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Hello, Michael. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi. It's good to be here.
Yeah. So the president makes this journey to Capitol Hill. I didn't realize it was only the first in 5 years. This legislation is important to him.
Well, it was his first visit to a policy lunch on the Hill. He has come to the Hill for other matters, and he has hosted a policy lunch at the White House.
Mm.
But this was it definitely was a rare visit. He came to try to make his case that this immigration bill is important and something that they should do. And it was from what we heard, a very cordial but frank exchange.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any indications that he changed any Republican minds?
Most people who left the lunch said that the senators have pretty much made up their minds on how they're going to vote on this, if they ever get to a vote that they feel is fair with the Democrats. That's been something that has kind of kept this from being a closer vote than we would think is out there. But for now, there's a lot of members in the Republican Party who don't want to see this bill pass, and there's a lot who do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a very close vote if it ever comes back.
Is the problem this quote-unquote amnesty part of the bill, Michael?
Well, with the Republicans, that is, there's two problems that the Republicans see. The first is that there would be two, that the president wants to allow 12 million or however many it is, illegal immigrants to be able to stay without any repercussions for breaking the law. The second is that a lot of these Republicans feel like the federal government has promised many times to take care of the border
mm-hmm.
and enforce the law, but what they haven't seen is the money or the action by the administration or previous administrations to actually enforce the law. And you heard that a lot yesterday. That was a big topic of the lunch, that a lot of the Republicans want to see the president ask for money from Congress specifically for border enforcement.
Mm-hmm. It's a big border. How would you thoroughly enforce that border? How much money would it take, and what are we talking about in terms of enforcement?
Well, the number is in the billions. It's clearly that much. And there's a whole bunch of different theories on how to do that best. For some Republicans, it's the idea of putting up a fence. It's the idea of having most people agree that an electronic employee verification system is something that has to be done at some point. All employees need to be checked. Their Social Security numbers need to be verified against a government database, although that is somewhat controversial with some people, that it could be a national ID that people are proposing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a whole other issue.
Right.
the president and his Department of Homeland Security feel that fencing is appropriate in some places, particularly urban areas. However, they feel that a virtual fence, unmanned aerial vehicles, sensors, surveillance-type equipment, and vehicle barriers can do the job as well and sometimes better than a physical barrier. Now, there's some disagreement over that, and that's why they're not all on the same page here.
Mm-hmm. This recent Washington Post ABC poll shows that a majority of Americans, albeit a narrow majority of people in this country, support a program to let immigrants live here, illegal immigrants to live here if they pay the fine and meet other requirements. But a majority, and I wonder how big this is, of Republicans surveyed oppose the provision.
Well, I think there are Republicans who oppose it, and we definitely heard from them. There certainly was a great outpouring from voters over the last week or two in opposition to this legislation, and a lot of Republicans said they've heard from quite a number of their constituents on this. There's also opposition on the Democratic side.
Right.
And it deals with other aspects of the bill, but this isn't something that is Republican against Democrat. It divides both parties. It's a regional issue in some cases. In some cases, it's a national issue. It certainly has people thinking that the solution is going to be messy, no matter what it is.
But is it, the press has been indicating that it's the Republicans who are blocking passage of this bipartisan measure. Is that true, or are Democrats equally to blame?
Well, it depends who you're reading, too.
But, yeah, right, I'm sure.
I do think that there is some sort of there are politics happening on this issue. Republicans have been putting up a number of amendments trying to, Harry Reid has been critical of that and saying that this is the president's bill. His cabinet officials worked with senators to draft it. They shouldn't be putting up hundreds of amendments trying to slow this train down.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, Democrats had put up a number of amendments that what the negotiators of this agreement have said would kill the deal that they made between people like Ted Kennedy, John Kyle, and the Department of Homeland Security and Commerce, among other senators. Democrats want to change the guest worker program. Democrats want to change the future system for issuing green cards. And there were some amendments that came out that seemed to threaten this deal that was made and perhaps stall the process as well.
Tell me about Kennedy's involvement in this. He's been working very, very hard on this issue. Why is it so important to him?
Well, anybody who knows Ted Kennedy knows that every immigration bill for the past 40 years he's been involved with. It's an issue.
Is that right?
It's an issue that he's been very involved with in his time in the Senate, and it's an issue that is very close to his personal feelings. He speaks very passionately about immigration, and most people that listen to him and work with him say that he is genuine in his desire to work on this issue. Now, they may not agree with his methods for which he wants to do it, but he's also known around Capitol Hill as a deal maker, somebody who likes to move legislation.
Mm-hmm.
We saw this a few years ago when he worked with George Bush on a education bill that a lot of people know as No Child Left Behind. He's worked on health care policy, and now he's working on immigration. A lot of people look to Kennedy, even Republicans, as somebody who can get stuff done.
Yeah. You know, what strikes me as very sad about this is this. Approval ratings for people in Congress, very low. We're not very happy with the Democrats. We're not very happy with the administration. It's hard to think of too many instances where there has been indeed bipartisan hard work and cooperation on crafting a bill. And it's sad, actually, to see it go down, because how many bipartisan efforts have there been?
Well, there probably aren't that many, but there also probably aren't that many issues like immigration that just strike a visceral chord with people. It's hard to to imagine another issue. One senator suggested to me that this is like civil rights legislation. Hmm. It's one of these issues that takes a long time to work through the system. And the problem that a lot of people see is they don't see the time. They don't see the luxury of time right now. Mm-hmm. That it's a huge problem at the mm-hmm. border. It's a huge problem in many people's community, and it feels like the federal government needs to act. A lot of people fear that if the federal government doesn't act, you're going to start seeing state and local government taking up resolutions, right. ordinances that some see as being probably more polarizing than mm-hmm. what the federal government's doing. So it's important to work this through, but at the same time, it's very complex, very emotional, and very difficult because it divides both parties.
Right.
And so I think that's one of the complexities of this that has made it a little more difficult than right. just the bipartisan nature.
Yeah. Well, one of the big issues, is, it strikes me, is that you've got 12 million people here who are not here legally, and I can't imagine that you're going to send them all back.
Well, and that's a bit of a misnomer, too, on the part of people who oppose the bill. I don't think anybody has come out and proposed, you know, getting a line of buses out and putting people on these buses and sending them home. What I think critics of the Senate bill and critics of the so-called amnesty proposal, which some people dispute is amnesty, but critics of this proposal say the way to get people to go home is to make their life more difficult here, to enforce the law, mm-hmm. to cut off the magnet of jobs, to make it so that if they're caught here, their life won't be as easy. Now, there's a lot of disagreement as to whether that would work or not, but that's what people are proposing. It's attrition is the word they use. It's nobody's publicly saying that they should round people up and send them home.
You were quoted in, what paper is this, the Arizona Daily Star. Don't know if you saw this or not, Michael. You said at a symposium here on immigration there, perhaps, that if key players from the House and Senate don't agree on the specifics of legislation this summer, there will be no substantive legislative action until after the 2008 presidential election. What are the chances of any agreement on specifics of legislation this summer?
Well, we're told by the senators that they're working diligently this week to bring this back, maybe as early as next week, possibly the week after. Like I said, there is a political dispute on the procedure. It's a procedural dispute, I should say, over how they would proceed on amendments and a time agreement. Whether or not they can get agreement on that is anybody's guess, but the senators who helped draft this bill seem determined to try to make it work. Of course, they'll kick it up to the leaders, Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell, and there, those two leaders will have to decide if they can bring this back mm-hmm. and do it quickly before the July 4th recess, or if it's something that is just going to linger for a while. And it wasn't me that said that. I was just repeating what a lot of senators have said to me mm-hmm. and Congress members, that if they don't do this before August, they all feel that the presidential politics will take over, and an issue like this will be very difficult to move on. Now, I don't think anybody ever suspected that the presidential campaign would be in such active mode right now. I mean, you know, with the debates we're having,
sure,
and
is.
The primaries moved up, it's almost as if we're in the we're almost in the prime campaign season now. So there's some people who feel that that's affecting this as well.
How so?
When you see John McCain on a stage with all the other Republican candidates, and he's taking question after question mm-hmm. on why he supports this, mm-hmm. and all the other candidates are saying that it's a bad bill, and McCain is left there by himself mm-hmm. to defend it, I think you're seeing that this bill is getting an airing in a public forum that it normally wouldn't have had mm-hmm. at this time.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Michael Sandler is immigration reporter for Congressional Quarterly. Later this hour, we'll be speaking with the co-director of immigration studies at New York University. So let's just hop to some of your phone calls, okay? David is calling from San Francisco first. Hi, David.
Well, morning. I was interested in this because about going on 10 years ago, here in California, we had a big bill called Prop 187. And many people don't realize it, but Hong Kong was on a 99-year lease from China. Mm-hmm. Britain had paid $1 for a 100 or 99-year lease. And that lease ran out, if I remember right, in 1998. So all of these wealthy Hong Kong people were eager to get to America. And there was a law firm down in L.A. or Oceanside or someplace or another down there. And they were making a huge amount of money selling green cards. The steering people through the process. Well, they realized that this 99-year lease was going to run, so they put together Prop 187 to make it harder for people to get in the country. And all of a sudden, the price of a green card went from like $800 to $40,000.
Wow.
And so because these fat cats or these lawyers figured out that they could play xenophobia and racism to their personal profit, now they've turned it into a nationwide thing. And so if you imagine that you've got 12 million people in this country, I've heard it's far less than that, but it's even if you got them to all pay $1 a piece, you could really cash in. And instead, they're going to make this nationwide jump from X amount of thousands of dollars worth of paperwork that each person is going to have to pay to probably tens or twenties of thousands of dollars in paperwork. So it's a huge scam. It's cheating America in 100 different ways because it makes our bureaucrats spend money on these guys that are going to make money on it. By making the process harder, they create more bureaucrats, and these Republicans always come to power saying that they're going to cut bureaucracy, and when in fact they're writing laws to make snooping and snitching and spying on Americans and people who want to be Americans. If you hurt America's reputation, why would anybody want to come here?
Michael.
Yes.
Your response.
Well, there's a lot to respond to there. I don't know where to begin. Perhaps the first thing that jumped out of my mind is the idea that charging illegal immigrants a dollar each would amount to a small fortune. I know many of us would love to have $12 million, but $12 million in the federal government is in the federal budget is not much money. So I think that would be spent very quickly by the Department of Homeland Security and so I think they need a lot more money than that. The caller mentioned a couple of things, I believe, in their the fraud that is associated with green cards, it sounded like, and the idea that this kind of really strikes emotions with people and has resulted in some xenophobia. I think there are a lot of senators who have been making that case on both sides of this debate. I do know that John McCain has said that If the federal government doesn't act, this is going to filter down to the state and local governments, and that's where you do see a lot more of this xenophobia and this emotional, visceral response. In terms of the fraud, if that's what the caller was referring to, that's why a lot of people want an employer verification system, so that there can be a tamper-proof card that all employees, including you and I, would have to present when we go for a new job and would have to be verified against a federal database.
Yeah. Thanks very much, David, for your call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Michael Sandler is our guest right now, immigration reporter for the Congressional Quarterly, and we're talking about the president's visit to Capitol Hill yesterday to a GOP policy lunch, the first visit of that kind in 5 years, trying to gather support for immigration reform, for an immigration bill that at least at this moment doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And we're welcoming phone calls for Michael. And let's go to Dorothy from Madison next. Hello, Dorothy.
Good morning.
Hi.
I am 83 years old. I'm a liberal. This makes me very angry. We have laws on the books right now that should be enforced. I don't understand why they aren't being enforced.
What laws are on the books concerning illegal immigrants, Michael?
Well, it's illegal to come here. It's illegal to overstay a visa. It's illegal to come here without a visa.
Yeah.
It's illegal to overstay a visa. And a number of, I'd say, estimates range as high as half the illegal population have overstayed visas, which is a troubling problem for immigration officials and Border Patrol agents, is that not all of these folks are sneaking across the border. A lot of them are, but many are coming here on legitimate visas and not returning home.
Mm-hmm.
Many are violating deportation orders. There are a lot of potential problems with our immigration system that most people agree need to be fixed. I also think it's interesting that the caller identified herself as a liberal and still said that she wants laws enforced. I think that speaks to one of the problems that Democrats face, particularly in the House of Representatives. A lot of them are hearing from their constituents that even if they would support allowing people to stay, it still rubs some people the wrong way, that people in their minds broke the law.
And then there's this other element of this, which I find hard to get past, and that's that you don't have a lot of these people who are you know, living on welfare of any kind or living on the dole. These people are working so hard, and there's this intensely human aspect of this story of people willing to risk their lives to send money back to their families, finding places to work. Obviously, they've found places to work all over the country with employers probably knowing that many of them are not here legally, but they're working very hard at very low wages. And that's a whole element in all of this that gets lost, I think.
Well, I don't think that gets lost. I think that's a big part of the president's message to people. That's a big part of Ted Kennedy's message to people and Arlen Specter, is that in their mind, these people are filling jobs that Americans don't want to do. I also think that point is why this is an issue that doesn't just resonate in Washington. In fact, it probably resonates more outside of Washington than most policy debates that are here, which is also complicating this matter. Every time you go somewhere to go get a sandwich, if you see a construction site, if you see people who are doing landscaping in a hospital, in a hotel, you're coming up against this issue.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing it more and more in many places, and not just border states like California and Arizona, but you're seeing it in Iowa, in Kansas, in South Carolina. It's an issue that we're all seeing on a daily basis, and then when we read about it and hear it on the radio and see it on television at night, it just compounds the issue in our head, and I think that's why this has really become an emotional issue for both the general public and the lawmakers.
Yeah. My point is, though, that I think that on some level, some of the opposition has demonized these people so that we get this illegal alien phrase. We get this, they're here illegally, and you don't get past that. You don't get past the fact that they're here to work. They're here to better their lives. They're here to participate, as many people would like to, in the American dream. They become an other.
Well, I do think that's something that is taking place out there. I don't know to what degree it's being done by the lawmakers or to what degree it's being done by just the general public, and they're responding to that. But that definitely is a factor out there.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Michael, for being with us.
Sure. Thank you.
And Michael Sandler is the immigration reporter for The Congressional Quarterly, has a piece that was posted just yesterday on the president's arrival on Capitol Hill, hoping to revive a sweeping immigration overhaul in the Senate that he's been keen on since he was first elected. And we're going to just switch guests here, continue the same conversation, so your phone calls will still be applicable the next half hour of the program. And the number for you to join us, again, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Joining us now is Professor Marcelo Suarez Orozco, University Professor and the Courtney Sale Ross University Professor of Globalization and Education at New York University, also co-director of Immigration Studies. He has worked on a number of issues concerning immigration for quite some time, and he is the author of several books. He talks about one child in five being the child of immigrants, and their numbers increase every year. Very few will return to the country. They barely remember. And who are they, and what America do they know? That's the subject of a book that he has written, which won the Warren Stone Award Best Book of 2007 at Harvard University Press. It is Learning a New Land, Immigrant Students in American Society. So we'll be welcoming phone calls for Professor Suarez Orozco. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. Joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. While we're getting him on the line, we do want to bring in an interesting second hour of the program. Several times as we've been talking about politics, the conversation has turned to Mormonism because of Mitt Romney's religion and a lot of questions about the faith. So we have actually the preeminent non-Mormon Mormon scholar with us. She's been studying the Mormon faith for some 45 years, Professor Emeritus of Religious Studies and History at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis, and author of Sojourner in the Promised Land, 40 Years Among the Mormons, will be joining us the second hour of our program. And I think we're all set now. Professor Suarez Orozco, hello.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Let me just ask you, do you think that there's going to be any kind of immigration bill passed by this bipartisan group sometime before the presidential race?
I doubt it.
You don't think so?
Because there is not enough consensus on the details. And the devil dwells in the details when you look at law, and especially when you look at as big a legal initiative as this would entail. So mm-hmm. Given the present climate, political climate, my sense is that we don't have enough momentum to build a real consensus on this issue.
And what's the big hang-up, do you think? Is it border security? Is it the fact that you got something that I didn't get and that's not fair? What is it?
Well, in fact, it's not border security. I think that's the one. There are basically four pillars in the new initiative in the bill that we've heard about over the last couple of weeks. Border security is the one domain where everyone agrees. In other words, there's a nearly unanimous bipartisan consensus around the issue of border controls, border security. I think that the three other areas are the areas where we really don't have consensus, and that is, first and foremost, what are we to do with the 12 million people in our country now who don't have legal documentation?
Right.
So we have a problem with 12 million undocumented immigrants. There's no consensus on that. Do we have a path to citizenship, as some of the Democrats and some of the Republicans suggested? Or no, there is no room to make a deal on that. The second domain is the area of the question of a guest worker program.
Mm-hmm.
Would that, in fact, work? Would it take off the pressure in terms of what the business community is claiming they need and the pressure for which is, in a way, instigating more undocumented immigration into our country. There is no consensus on that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no consensus, really, on revamping the family reunification law. Remember that since 1965 in our country, family reunification has really been the philosophical framework for how and why people come to our country.
Right.
We have a theory and we have a legal framework that came out of the 60s that put family ahead of all other mm-hmm. considerations. Now, in the new bill that we've heard about over the last couple of weeks, there was a notion floated that a new point or merit system would be introduced, a system more like the Canadian system, more like the system in New Zealand, more like other systems where education, profession, job qualifications, job skills, we'd have really a huge priority of the possible 100 points that would be offered under the new law. 75% of those points would come through these education and professional qualifications mechanism
mm-hmm.
versus family reunification. Right. You have, right. Your son or your daughter or your, you have a nuclear family member that is a U.S. citizen. Mm-hmm. That would take secondary. So there is no consensus on really the three of the four main pillars of the new law. Until we have a consensus, I don't see a law feasible now.
Yeah. What would happen? Let me just ask a real simplistic question here, but I wonder what the answer would be, so thus I ask it. What would happen if we just let everybody in who wants to be here, just had open-door policy? We have had in the past, haven't we?
Well, I mean, all states draw boundaries, and all states have mechanisms for letting people in or out. I mean, it's an interesting historical question. What would happen? I mean, we have some examples of what would happen. I mean, think of Europe. Europe, after the Schengen Agreement, essentially did away with borders, internal borders. Now, this is recent, and what's interesting and kind of illustrative is that, when I started teaching in Europe about 20 years ago, the notion that there would be no boundaries, say, between Spain and Germany, border controls. Of course, they're not bordering countries, but there are still, of course, there were still internal controls. That idea would have been a crazy idea because the consensus was at the time poorer Spanish folk, especially from the rural areas, would be moving in huge numbers to the richer mm-hmm. countries in Northern Europe, to Germany, to Sweden, to Belgium, so on and so forth. In fact, that did not happen. When the European Union, as per the Schengen Agreement, decided to dissolve its internal boundaries, it did so in a very, very orchestrated way. It integrated the markets. There was a great deal of internal European Union aid to the Spanish economy, by the way, to the Irish economy as well.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, what you have now is a fantastic paradox, which is the three countries in Europe that were the countries that used to have the most immigrants, meaning people leaving, right, Italy, Ireland, Spain, for the New World, for the United States, for Canada, for Argentina, for Brazil, now are the three most important sources.
Isn't that something?
Of new immigration.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There was an economic integration. There were no huge flows of people from the poorer areas of Italy and Spain or Ireland into the wealthier countries. So, one claim is that this is all regulated by the market, mm-hmm. that you have more open borders, and the more ambitious people will make the journey, and they will get jobs, because you have to keep in mind that the most important magnet, why do we have immigrants? We have immigrants because it has been a huge magnet in terms of the opportunity structure, the labor market in our country.
Mm-hmm.
That has been driving really at all sectors of the U.S. economy. So if you look at the knowledge-intensive sector of the economy, you go to Silicon Valley, you go to the Boston area, you go to the where highly skilled, highly educated workers are needed, immigrants are way overrepresented in that category. So it's really all sectors. It's the service sector, it's mm-hmm. the knowledge-intensive sector. We have an economy that likes immigrant labor.
Yes, right. So let's go back to that first question that you talked about before that first area, and then we'll go back to our phone calls, because it's the real problem area here. And I wonder, just in terms of humanity, a sense of humanity about this, and a sense of what's good for business and what's good for America, what is the best solution, and what would Americans agree to, and maybe these are two different questions, to do with 12 million people who are in this country and they're undocumented? What are we to do with them?
Yeah, including there are millions of children who are U.S. citizens.
Right, yes,
living
yes.
in households where the head of the household is an undocumented immigrant. So I think that that's the elephant in the room. In
right.
other words, at what point does a democracy cease to live to its ideal
right.
and its promises when fully a third of our immigrant origin population doesn't have any papers? So my sense is that eventually we're going to reach a consensus, a bipartisan consensus, that a path to regularize the status of these 12 million people will need to be found. So there is no solution. I think everyone has agreed The president has said it's impractical to think that we're going to round up 12 million people and repatriate them. Where are we going to send them? We have people from over 190 different countries living in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
How would this work? Are we ready to break up families, families that have children, citizen children, families that have been established in the United States, in some cases for decades? So my sense is that we're going to need to find a political solution that articulates some kind of a path to regularizing the status. And we're really going to need to think more broadly and more ambitiously about how to regulate the flow of people to our country. And we need to find a balance between the economic issues, our values as a society.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, Kathleen, we are the only wealthy, advanced, post-industrial democracy in the world. We're the only major world power, or maybe one of two or three, that has immigration at its history. And in a way, as its destiny.
Mm-hmm.
We're the only country where immigration is the history of our country. It's also the future of our country.
Right.
Last year, on October 17th, at 7:46 in the morning, we're told by the U.S. Bureau of the Census, the 300th million American was born. You know, the census did a formula. They did a very elaborate statistical profile. And they found that that child, that 300th million American, was born in L.A., 7:46 in the morning, 17 October 2006, probably the child of Mexican immigrants.
Hmm.
So that's the future of our country. It's
right.
our history. It's our future.
Right.
We need a rational, legally sensitive, and humanistic way
right.
to immigration.
It is what makes America America, right? If you travel the world, that's a very unique thing about this country. The wave of immigrants, the makeup of this population, it's a wonder of America.
Exactly. We've been at this for over a century, I mean, large-scale immigration,
mm-hmm.
and it's what makes us different from, say, Europe. I mean,
yes,
Germany,
yes.
I was recently in Germany giving some lectures. Germany is a country that today is looking to a future where immigration will be an important part of the future of Germany because of a very, very unique set of demographic predicaments. Germany is an aging population. They have below replacement fertility rates. They have a very, very rapidly aging population. They're going to need immigrants in order to sustain the German social security system, their German way of life. They've never had this before. We had this before. We had large-scale immigration before. We had huge numbers of immigrants settling in Wisconsin, in New York, in California. This is not a new story.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Professor Suarez Orozco. And here's our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. He's university professor, the Courtney Sale Ross University Professor of Globalization and Education, co-director of Immigration Studies at NYU. He has, as he mentioned, taught really all over the world at the University of Barcelona, he's taught in Belgium. He's taught he studied at the University of California, Berkeley, educated in Argentina, and is the author of a number of books on immigration, including most recently a book that was won the Warren Stone Award for Best Book of 2007 of the Harvard University Press. That book is Learning a New Land: Immigrant Students in American Society. All right, to your phone calls, more of them in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. As we've discussed the presidential candidates and the presidential race, questions have come up about the Mormon faith. I think there aren't all that many Mormons in the United States, and so it still is a faith that we don't know a great deal about. It's, of course, surfaced in terms of conversations about Mitt Romney, and some commentators have said a key question of his campaign will be how he addresses the tenets of his Mormon faith. We will be talking about Mormonism the second hour of our program today and speaking with a woman who has studied the Mormon faith. She is not a Mormon. She's a Methodist, but she studied the Mormon faith for 45 years now. She's a professor emeritus of religious studies and history at Indiana University, Purdue University in Indianapolis. Professor Suarez Orozco is with us now, and we go back to phone calls and to Jason next from Appleton. Hi, Jason.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was watching Lou Dobbs on CNN the other night, which if anyone follows this at all knows that Lou Dobbs is very vocal about this issue. And he was talking about statistics, certain industries, construction, agriculture, and then servers, that type of service industry, hotel workers, and how over the last 4 or 5 years the average wage has actually declined, which I found amazing. And then after I thought about it, I used to work years ago for an employer who, a construction employer, and I really didn't have any experience, and there were also a few illegal immigrants that he had hired that also had no experience. He was paying them probably 25% less starting out than he was paying me, and I thought that was kind of odd, and I thought, well, he's profiting off of this, and I guess the Lou Dobbs numbers, I guess, could work out if that were the case, because it certainly worked with me. And I'm wondering, where in this immigration law that they're trying to pass, what does it say about holding employers accountable for this? It seems crazy to me that employers could knowingly hire someone who's here illegal, and I don't know. I guess I'm wondering what's going to happen with them, and they just passed this thing up in Green Bay, making employers accountable, and I thought to myself, this is crazy that we have to pass this. This should have been passed years ago, or should have been enforced years ago.
Okay, let's get a response. Professor Suarez-Orozco.
Yeah, in fact, the law of the land is that it is illegal to knowingly hire an undocumented worker. This came out of during the Reagan administration, the IRCA, Immigration Control Reform Act of 1987, exactly 20 years ago, which made it illegal for employers to knowingly hire undocumented workers. So that's the law of the land. The issue is that this is one of the most anemically enforced laws, possibly, in our country. So you need to have real teeth in terms of enforcing, given these tremendous pressures towards lowering wages as a function of large-scale immigration. But let me say this. I mean, the research shows, the National Research Council, which is the research arm of the U.S. Congress, did a major study of the implications of large-scale immigration for the U.S. economy. And in general, overall, the consensus among the economists is that immigration overall, in total, if you look at our total economy, it generates a surplus of a few billion dollars. And the way it does it is, A, immigrants bring in free human capital to the United States. By some estimates, the U.S. gets roughly, probably, the order of $50 billion a year.
So oh, my.
Doctors from Ghana, nurses from Jamaica, nurses from the Philippines, computer scientists from India that we don't spend a penny educating. They come to our country and they become immensely productive, free of cost to the U.S. taxpayer. There are some pressures at the lower end of the opportunity of the labor market. Probably the best research to date suggests that there may have been a relatively minor decline, maybe 4 to 8 percentage points for U.S. citizens who are high school dropouts that can be traced to large-scale immigration directly. And paradoxically, of course, these tend to be minority workers, Hispanic workers that are U.S. citizens, African-American workers. But in general, I think the preponderance of evidence that what most economists will tell you is that overall the impact of immigration in the U.S. economy is a relative surplus.
And thanks, Jason, very much for the call. We go to Gino next from Milwaukee. Hi, Gino.
Hello. Thank
Hello.
You for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to share a personal story with you, and the professor will probably be able to elaborate much better on how this actually affects the United States citizens' rights as citizens. Last year, about the month of April, I myself am an immigrant, of course, and I'm married to a United States citizen. I was then married to a United States citizen. I was arrested a few days after filing for adjustment of status proceedings, and was held in jail for 30 days.
Oh, my gosh.
I was given a copy of my arrest warrant 2 or 3 days before I was released. And this all took place in the morning in our living room in front of my American citizen wife and her father watching. And
you were trying to, what was the adjustment that you were involved in, Gino? You were trying to adjust what?
My status, my immigration status.
Uh-huh.
Because I had, my visa had run out of status. And then I married my current wife.
I see.
And then I wanted to do the right thing and get my paperwork straightened out and be productive and so on. And for some really strange reason, they put me in jail for it.
Mm-hmm.
And the stories that I've heard while in jail from other immigrants who eventually ended up deported was that this is a common practice. This is happening every day in America. They take spouses of American citizens and they throw them out of the country.
What's your status now?
I'm almost at the green card. I did not give up despite what's happened to me, but I will. I can honestly say that it's totally destroyed my trust in the government and how it does its work.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not giving up. Of course, I didn't come to this country to fail. And I love my wife and son.
Professor Suarez Orozco.
Well, this is the human voice of mess that we've created in a mm-hmm. way, right? I mean, we have an economy that is, as the previous caller suggested, deeply addicted to immigrant workers, and there is this tremendous ambivalence about managing immigration and the human toll, the human cost is what we've just heard. I mean, there are literally 2 million children that are U.S. citizen children born in the United States, citizens like you and I, who live in households where the head of household is an undocumented immigrant. And they are tremendously vulnerable. Of course, the children have the right to remain in the United States, but that has no, bears no legal relationship to the status of the undocumented parent. So deportations, arrests, these are huge issues. That's why there is a tremendous need here to arrive at a political consensus to once and for all address this issue. 12 million people are caught in this system now.
12 million people. Thanks, Gino, very much for your call. Let's go to Mike from Appleton next. Hello, Mike.
Yeah, hi. There's another side of the coin, however, with you know, your previous caller. And it's a very sad story, and I feel very sadly for him. However, he did have the opportunity to do it legally, as I personally have done with two people that I sponsored. We went through the legal channels. We paid what we had to pay. We paid the fees, the attorneys, et cetera. We waited the 2 or 3 years, and then my people came, and they're here legally. So, yeah, I know it's very sad, but there are avenues to do it correctly. That's point number one. And please let me talk, because I'm very passionate about this, and I've lived all over the world. And if there's one thing that differentiates the United States from most countries in the world is the rule of law. And we have in this country people who have broken our law. So we have to enforce our law. Another point, the number of 12 million is tossed around. Do they really know? Is it 12? Is it 50? I mean, you know, we're about to take a huge step and legalize an X number of people that we really don't know how many, you know, we're talking about. Final point. With regards to jobs that American won't do, and I'm so sick of hearing that, let's take a look at the case of Swift. The Swift company had illegal immigrants working there. They got them out. As far as I know, Swift company hasn't foundered. They're still working, but now they're working with either U.S. citizens or legal immigrants and paying them what they should pay them. And, yeah, Swift company's making a little less money, but, you know, that's the way it is.
All right, let's get a response. We have about a minute left, Professor Suarez Orozco.
Yeah, I think it's a very, very good point. We have our Constitution. We have our Bill of Rights. The United States is a country of immigrants. It's a country of people from all over the world. And we have, in fundamental ways, we share a few but tremendously powerful, I would say almost sacred, beliefs. And I think the rule of law, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, is at the very, very center of that, the notion that we come from all over the world, but we're going to agree to, in a way, be a part of this very powerful framework
mm-hmm.
that has been established
to create a more perfect union. I think that that's why this issue of undocumented immigration is such an emotional issue, and it's such a central issue for our political class to resolve. In terms of the wages, I agree with the caller. Somebody is making a lot of money
right.
out of this dysfunctional system.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we need a more muscular, a more robust framework so that we mm-hmm. can have an orderly legal system that would enable the businesses to get the workers they need at wages that are reasonable within the framework and the standards of various communities,
yeah.
while continuing, in a way, this tradition of making us what is unique in the world. We are a country of immigrants. That's
yeah.
the history of our country.
And on that note, we are out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. Please return. We're a wonderful guest. Our guest, Professor Marcelo Suarez Orozco. He's the co-director of immigration studies at New York University. And we thank also the immigration reporter for Congressional Quarterly, Mike Sandler, for talking about what's been going on the Hill. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, to Mimi Notstein, and to Sharome Owens for on-air production here. And we'll continue following the news.